There's the sound we love to hear. So we're going to pick up where we left off last week. I'm actually going to recap some of the things. I will admit that freely, and it's not just about other people, but even in my life, some of the things that Jesus talked about in the passage we're looking at today are not his most popular things that he said. I do think that growing up the way that I did in the kind of religious background that I had, I misunderstood some of the things that he was saying. And it's always important if we're going to look at instruction by Jesus that we look at it in the context, who it was spoken to, what was going on when he said it, weigh it with other things that he said, instead of just grabbing something out of its context and beating people over the head with it. And then Jesus makes a statement in this passage that we're looking about that is one of the most disbelieved things that he ever said. And the reason that it's disbelieved is because it goes so flagrantly contrary to the mainstream of our culture. And Jesus says, if you do this, you'll discover life. And the world says, that's exactly wrong. It's exactly the opposite of that. And then, of course, we look him in the eyes and we get to pick which one we're going to believe. It is an effective lesson to try it both ways and discover that he was not exaggerating, that he was telling the truth. But and some of us, that's the best way that we learn. So I will freely admit, I do not expect everybody to believe these things that Jesus is going to say. And to be honest with you, I didn't believe them myself for a long time, but they are the truth. The truth can be investigated and it'll still be true. So we started last week in the same passage of verse 23 of chapter 9 with Peter being interrupted. Next week, we'll see him being interrupted again by God. You would think that he would learn. Peter, totally out of sync with Jesus's agenda, and the instinct, the reason why Peter was out of sync was a really good one, but it was very misplaced. He was trying to protect Jesus. This isn't the last time Peter is going to step in and try to protect the Son of God. And it didn't work, and he wound up becoming an obstacle. Last week, we saw Jesus, one of the few times in all four Gospels, one of the few times he ever snapped at somebody. And it's jarring because this is the person who seemed to be able to find a kind way to say the most scathing things to the people who needed to hear it. And here's Peter, his buddy. But the problem with Peter is that when he was trying to protect Jesus, remember Jesus told him he was going to suffer. He told him who was going to put him to death. He said, on the third day, I'm going to rise from the dead. And Peter, good old Peter, trying to protect Jesus, took him aside and said, well, Lord, this is never going to happen. It's almost like he's saying, Jesus, everybody loves you. You just need to have faith in yourself. You need to believe in yourself. They're not going to put you to death. And Jesus snapped at him and said, out of my way, Satan, adversary. And this is Peter that about 10 minutes before Jesus had told him that he had special spiritual insight that from the Holy Spirit. So here's a guy who the Holy Spirit speaks through him, and 10 minutes later, he is totally in the flesh, totally looking at things from a purely human perspective, which is the definition of being in the flesh. And I said last week, I find that comforting because that happens to me. It happens more than it should. There is a cure, and that is to think before we react. Peter was famous for not thinking before he reacted, but the fabulous thing is Peter did change. And Peter the chicken, Peter the grab your sword first, ask questions later, kill them all and then find out which ones were innocent, that Peter with that kind of an instinct. Greatly changed, filled with the Holy Spirit. I find that comforting. I also find it comforting that Jesus didn't fire him. when he did it wrong, because he did it wrong more than he did it right. So in that context of Peter, the spokesman, so to speak, illustrating that the agenda that they had in their minds, the picture they had in their minds of where the whole storyline was going, was completely the opposite of the direction that God's plan was for Jesus. It's not an uncommon thing. That's why we have to be really careful when we give advice to people, to make sure we run it through God and make sure it's His advice that we're giving them. And so Jesus takes the opportunity. I'm glad that we have it written down. It sets precedence for us. And he talked about the terms for being a disciple, a follower. Remember, that's what he called each of these 12. It's what he called them to when he first insinuated himself into their lives and when they were in the middle of business as usual. He called them to be a follower. We'll talk about what that word means, because a lot of people are very have very mistaken ideas about that. Go to church, and they call themselves followers of Jesus, and yet they're not actually going where he's going and doing what he's doing. And sometimes they have very little contact with him. They just are following their own plans. So we'll look at what Jesus said the terms for discipleship are. He said these things more than once. In fact, somebody counted out that these things that we're going to be looking at here today are actually the most common things that Jesus taught. And here's the tragedy, folks. They are the most ignored things by church people that Jesus taught. It's like what Holly was saying today. It sounds so noble to call yourself a follower of Jesus, and you can do that and still live for yourself. Jesus gets the bad name for that, but we can feel better about ourselves. So, I don't know about you, this challenges me. I take these things to heart. Somewhere along the line in each of our lives, Jesus looks at us and says the same things that he's saying to these guys right now. And so I'm not going to water it down. I would not be doing my job. I just want to read first. We'll read the same passage that we looked at last week. I have three or four completely different pages of notes, so that proves I didn't talk about enough of it last week. So, after he had to tell Peter that Peter was an obstacle, that Peter, well-intended as he was actually in the way, he was making it harder for Jesus to choose God's way. Here's what he says, verse 23, Luke 9. Then he said to them all, "If anyone wants to come after me," three terms, "he must deny himself, take up his cross daily, and follow me, because whoever wants to save his life will just lose it. But whoever loses his life for me will save it." Matthew's account I like better. I always write in my margins. Matthew said, whoever loses his life for me will find it. It's a word of discovery. It's the word for finding hidden treasure. Okay. Does that sound anything like what you hear in the world around you? Sounds just the opposite of our culture. It is the exact upstream against the culture statement that always actually offends some people. Like I said, I didn't believe it myself. I thought Jesus didn't know what he was talking about for the longest time. He does give some more reasons, verse 25. What good is it if a man would gain the whole world and yet lose or forfeit his very self? If anyone's ashamed of me and my words, the Son of Man will be ashamed of him when he comes in his glory, in the glory of the Father and the holy angels. Verse 27, I believe, fits with next week's event, so I'm not going to read that. By the way, whenever Jesus talked about any people being ashamed and he's going to be ashamed of them, remember every single one of these guys abandoned him. Every one of them. They all flaked out. Some of them flaked out, you know, in Olympic style. Some of them just sort of flaked out just in total chickenness, but they all failed. They all, when push came to shove, made choices for self-protection instead of for Jesus. Here's the thing, folks, they were all forgiven. That is forgivable. And I don't know about you, I've done it myself. I've come to a point where I realize, you know, by the way, self-protection is the opposite of love. And what Jesus is saying in this passage is, if you live a life being self-absorbed, self-centered, self-protecting, it won't work. It isn't going to preserve your life. And then he says the thing that none of us believe. He says, if you give away your life, if you relinquish ownership, like some of the songs we sang today, then you'll discover it. So I'm not going to try to convince you to believe that. Like I said, I didn't believe it either. But I have found that if I say I do believe it, and I determine to live by it, it will be tested. It's not something that works in theory. It affects the choices I make. And so let's look at it today. I found a whole completely different set of notes than I had last week, which was kind of exciting and a little bit scary that I could have written two separate sets of notes. But I did find lots of nuggets I didn't bring out, so I'm glad about this. Two things I want to say first up front. They're not disclaimers, but they're just definers. When you grow up in legalism like I did, where people grow up in legalistic families where all love must be earned, where you have to perform to be accepted, or you grow up in a religion where God is basically neutral and he's sitting there, and if you're a really good boy, then he loves you, and if you're a naughty boy, then he hates you. We talked about that Wednesday night, by the way, in Romans. Pick up the CD. Tremendously encouraging. But if you grow up that way, it is so easy, and I've heard many sermons where all these things that Jesus said about the terms of discipleship, people use it as the way that you define whether or not God loves you. And that's simply not true. You could disobey every one of these terms that Jesus laid out, and he will still love you. These are not the terms for your salvation. That's one of the big failings in legalism. Keep all the rules, and then you're saved. And the Bible just says otherwise. It says that Jesus paid for my sin. What saves me is that I turn from my sin and I accept that payment that he made for me. I believe that it's enough, and I stand on that. You can do that without being a disciple. Last week I talked about a few people that I've talked to who, they love the forgiveness of sins thing, they love the pie in the sky by and by for you and I when we die, if we try thing, you know, the reward in heaven. They like that. They just, one guy just was flat honest. I appreciate honesty. And he said, you know, I just have these sins. I really like them. I'm not ready to give them up yet. So I don't think I want to be a disciple. And he said, I've pretty much tried to do the giving your life away thing. It didn't work. So now I'm living for me. So I don't want to be a disciple. And I thought, okay, you don't have to be. Ever since I got here, the Lord has said to me over and over at certain strategic times in my life when I was whining and I wanted to get out of here, and he said, look, Bob, you can leave anytime you want to. You can. I'll still love you. Go wherever you want to go. I will still use your life. But if you want to do what I want you to do right now, I want you to be here. I hate it when he says that. You know what I mean? Because, what's really at stake there? What's really at stake there is not my will, but your will be done. which is another noble thing to say until you actually have to give something up. So these are the things that come to play. So as we're looking at these terms, as we're looking, we're just going to look at them and under the operating room lights where you can see every detail, and we're not going to squint our eyes at it. We're going to, I'm not asking you to believe it even. But as we look at that, remember, Jesus isn't talking about the terms for his loving us. He's not talking about the terms of our salvation. Different terms. And he loves us, period. What he's talking about is, and this was the critical juncture for these guys. These guys are facing this direction. In fact, they had so much in mind what they thought it was going to look like, they didn't even hear the stuff that he said. And it all boils down to this in verse 23, where he starts out by saying, if a man wants to be with me, if he wants to follow me, some of the translations say, if he wants to be my disciple, which is technically what they were calling themselves. He said, if you want to be where I'm going, I'll still love you if you go that way. But if you want to be where I'm going this way. So it's not going to work if you want to be with me, if you have a different mindset than I do. It's just pure logic, isn't it? So, and one point I wrote to myself in my new set of recently discovered notes. I love it when God reasons with me. I'm such an emotional person, and I'm hyper-analytical, which is also a really bad combination. And sometimes when I'm just emotionally freaking out, God just lays it out to me so logically and clearly. I know it has to be him because I'm just in that emotional, out-of-control state. But here's the logic of this. And it all settles down to what I believe about God. It's pointless to wrestle against someone who only has my best interest at heart all of the time. Wouldn't you be an idiot to wrestle with that kind of a person? Well, that depends. That depends on what he thinks is the best for me. It's different than what I think is best for me, and that's the problem. Sometimes we just don't know him well enough to make a really good value judgment about what's best for us. But here's the logic of it. It's pointless to wrestle with someone who only has my best interest at heart, and here's the clincher for me. God is the only one that can actually make it happen. So wouldn't I be dumb to be fighting with him? And once again, well, that depends. That depends on whether he's going where I want to go. You know what I mean? But and this flies in the face of pretty much modern American Christian thought. Our version of discipleship is, Lord, here's my plans, here's my dreams. You have the biggest power in the universe, the lots, most money, so I need you on my side. Lord, take up your cross and follow me. And that's American Christianity in a nutshell. And it just doesn't even remotely resemble these things that Jesus is saying. And that's what we're talking about today. If anyone, it's one of those all-inclusive words. Anyone wants to be with me. In the context of these guys, it's here and now. There's a guy's right in front of you. He's saying there's a huge fork in the road. There's the, let's make Jesus the king here and now, and let's already decide who's going to be Homeland Security and who's going to be vice president and who's going to be secretary of state and who's the most important. They were always arguing about that. And let's go this way. Or Jesus is saying, well, love you guys, but this is where I'm going. And in order for me to do what God's telling me to do, I'm going to have to completely contradict your advice. I'm going to have to lay my life down when you're trying to get me to take the comfortable route. And that's why I snapped at Peter. The example I used last week is, if you are trying to be diligent on a diet and somebody offers you a pint of Häagen-Dazs, if you're not me, and if you're smart, you don't even look at it. You immediately turn away. You don't inhale, just in case ice cream has a smell to it, because you realize this well-meaning person that's acting like they love you is offering you something that's going to make it harder for you to keep your boundaries. Often when people are trying to maintain their boundaries, they look angry. For me, if I do that, I don't think of myself as an especially angry person. But when I have to snap at somebody who's challenging my boundaries, it's because I'm weak. And I want to be strong. And I want to make the right choice. So that's Jesus and Peter. Peter just loved Jesus. I mean, he was just a doofus. He meant well. He was positive. He knew what the best thing for Jesus was. But he was just totally wrong. I love the invitation of this. Jesus said to them all after the rebuke of Peter. He said to all of them, okay, any of you guys, you want to be with me. You want to be where I'm going. I'm going a different direction than you think. And in order to companion with me, you're going to need to have the same mindset. This needs to be settled, he says. If you're going to follow me, you're going to need to know where I'm going. All the next three verbs, these conditions, if you will, of being a companion and a follower with him. Once again, these aren't conditions of whether Jesus is going to love you. These aren't conditions of whether you're even saved. It's just whether you're going to be following where he's going at any given point in time. All of these verbs are volitional verbs. They're all imperatives in Greek. Deny, take up, follow. So they're not optional. They are requirements, and it's just logical. It's like the song that we sang from Micah 6:8, where the prophet speaking for God says, you know, he's already shown you what the Lord wants from you. And he only listed three things, you know. Act justly. Why would God want us to do that? Well, because he does. Love mercy. Why would he want us to love mercy? Well, because he does. And walk humbly with our God. Why does he want us to do that? Well, because he wants to be with you. Same exact deal. You can make the choice or not make the choice, but he's just laid it all out. This is the way I do things. This is what's going to look like being with me. I love what the Amplified Bible says about this word deny in verse 23. I'll just give you the amplifications on this verb that the Amplified Bible uses. It means to abandon self-centeredness. Why, that's un-American. Disown one's life. Oh, here's one I really like. Refocus one's priorities from self to Jesus. Priorities. Priorities is the sticky wicket, isn't it? Priorities, by definitions, are the proper arrangement of important things. And, of course, then depends on what's important and who decides what priority is what. And this is a pretty foreign concept in our culture, even in our Christian culture. What does it look like to disown one's life, to abandon self-centeredness? Well, we sang a bunch of songs about it this morning to hopefully plant that thought. Here's a note I wrote to myself in my newly discovered set of notes. So glad I found these. I'm not even going to tell you where I found them, but it was not in Luke. It was not in my Luke notebook. I'm not even going to tell you. It's too embarrassing. Here's the notes. While we're considering this, remember who is saying it. Okay? Three things I wrote down that need to be considered when I start feeling like Jesus is just being unreasonable. If I don't look out for myself, nobody is. You know, all the things the world says, that's just unreasonable. It's fanatical. It's irresponsible if you just live the way he said. Okay? Just look at who's saying it. Three things I wrote down. Number one, he's absolutely pure love. So much so that he was willing to take my most, the things I'm the most ashamed of in my life, my worst habits, my worst sins, and he's willing to take it on himself completely, exchange the judgment and condemnation that I deserve for my sins. In my heart of hearts, I know I do. He's willing to take that all on himself, give me his righteousness in exchange. So is he interested in my well-being? Absolutely. And folks, he put his money where his mouth was, and more than anyone ever has, say, I love you. So that's the first thing. And the second thing is that he is absolute perfect wisdom. Colossians says one of those astonishing things when it talks about who Jesus is in the cosmos. And it says that he, by him, by his power, talking about his power in creation, his power, his creative thought in thinking things up before he even invented them out of nothing. And then it says, by him, all things cohere. What an odd word. It means that though we know that the particles, the subatomic particles, should be repelling one another, because they're not opposite charges. Some of them, we don't know what holds them together. They call it nucleic glue, for lack of a better term. But Colossians says, oh, that's easy. That's Jesus holding it all together. And once again, that is an astonishing thing, and I don't think anybody should just swallow that without thinking about it. But if it's true, here's the thing I've looked at when my life seemed to be falling apart. I've thought, okay, logically, wouldn't it make sense that if I can't hold this together, I would at least let Jesus try? I mean, he's holding the whole universe together, so if I believe what the Bible says about him, why? How do I think I'm going to fix it? It's not even logical. If he can't fix it, if I'm too chicken to give him total control, if he can't fix it, how do I think I'm going to be able to fix it? So look at my resume versus his resume, and it's a no-brainer. Pure love, perfect wisdom, and he's our creator. I love the fact that I am not part of a herd for God. From his point of view, I'm just not the rolling, you know, and I'm not one of a zillion human cows in his herd, that he made me unique. I'm not like my brother. My brother's not like me. I'm sure he's very thankful for that. I'm not supposed to be. I'm not supposed to be like you. You're not supposed to be like me. Our Creator has a plan and a design for each of us. For me, God has very often asked me to take a path that was different than what would have been my preference. I've asked him for 15 years. I'm saying, I don't get why you have me here doing this. Why don't you let me do something I'm good at instead of something I'm working really hard, have to whip myself into self-discipline mode to do it. Well, anybody that's ever trained for athletics realize that's not a bad thing. That's a good thing. And he has an answer. He knows how I should best be loving. So disowning myself, giving myself to him is just, if I know him, if I think about who he is, what kind of taste he has, what kind of wisdom he has, how pure love he has, it's just logical. It's a perfectly logical decision. It is one, however, as I said earlier, that's going to put us directly against the current of our cultural stream in this country. It will. It's just, there's no way that we're going to be able to flow, go with the flow of the way our world is going and live this way that he's asking. And I remember one of the studies I listened to a couple of weeks ago from my friend Damien Kyle. He just talks about how wearying that is. In a study where he talked about the secret of not losing heart, which I totally related to. He just said, you know, if you're constantly walking against the mainstream of the river, it's just going to wear you out. You're going to need to receive more strength. If you were standing in the shallows or dangling your little tippy toes in the little tide pools, no big deal. You don't need much strength to do that. But Jesus knows what he's inviting these guys to do. Remember, they are the center of attention right now. They are riding the groundswell of public opinion. Right now, they're the most, they've got paparazzi, Jewish paparazzi, following them around everywhere because, you know, Jesus and me were just like this. You know, Today Show is inviting them on, saying, "Now, what's Jesus really like?" You know, and you know him better than anyone. You know, that's the world that, and they think it's just going to get better and better and better. And they have no idea, even though he's told them. They have no idea that in a fairly short period of time, they're going to be hunted men, and people are going to want to, the same people are going to be wanting to kill them because they're with Jesus. And so he's saying, guys, this is the fork in the road. We got to figure this out. If you are intent on owning yourself, I'm giving myself away. For one thing, you're going to have to stop trying to kill the people that I'm trying to save. That ain't going to work. You're going to not be able to pick your own way. You're going to have, if you want to be with me, I'm not picking my way. I'm doing what Father says. And so it's, I just love how upfront he is. He's done that with me more than once. I remember when I got a phone call, an excited phone call from a lady that owned a publishing company in San Diego. And she was jazzed to be able to find me because she was a fan and she wanted to jump, her words were she wanted to jump start my musical career. And immediately I'm calculating out, okay, that would mean I would have to leave here. That would mean I wouldn't be doing what God told me to do. And as appealing as it was, I snapped at her, to be honest with you. And I said, and please don't call me back. It's hard enough without you dangling this over here, which is typical of Satan's way, isn't it? I did hurt her feelings, and I did have to call her back, and I have to say, I'm sorry, I know you were just trying to be nice. But I can relate to what Jesus is saying. Second thing, besides denying yourself, disowning yourself, he says, take up your cross. Anybody wants to follow me, take up your cross. That means it's a willful choice. We have our cliche, you know, if you're born with straight hair and you wish you had curly hair, you just say, well, that's the cross I'm going to have to bear. Or if you find out you have diabetes like I do, then you say, well, I guess that's the cross I have to bear. But that's our cliche. That's not what Jesus is talking about. He's not talking about something you would ditch if you could, but you can't, so you're just going to learn to bear it. He's talking about making a willful choice to take up something that any Jewish person living in occupied Israel was familiar with crucifixion, because the Romans liked to crucify people right on the main highway. You know, here's a little reminder. This is how we feel about public disobedience and resurrection, and they're just dead bodies hanging on the cross all the way into town. So they had no delusions then when Jesus talked about taking up their cross that he was telling them to buy Christian jewelry to wear or put bumper stickers on their car. The cross meant one thing and one thing only to them, and that it was an instrument of death. So what he was saying is whatever it is, when you've disowned yourself, if you want to be with me, this is what I'm going to do. This is the direction I'm going. I am daily going to take up the instrument of death to myself, life. It's just a picture of taking up your cross, as a picture of being willing to suffer and even die, if need be, in order to follow him. Not a lot of that going around. I hate to say it, but not a lot of it going around, even in my profession. I remember having a conversation at the pastor's conference with a bunch of guys that were saying, yeah, it's really crummy at the church I'm at right now, but, you know, I'm only going to be here for a short time until I'm discovered, and, you know, then I'm going to step up, and I'm going to, you know, I'll get a plum job. And I felt like saying, you guys, do you know that Jesus can hear this? You know, your boss. You don't want my boss to fire you because when my boss fires you, he uses real fire. So I want to read these terms and take it seriously. I want to say something about suffering because the best definition I ever heard of it came from a book by Elizabeth Elliot called A Path Through Suffering. By the way, I didn't, of my noble, selfless heart, go out and buy that book. Someone sent it to me. It wasn't a very appealing. I would like a book titled A Path Around Suffering. The path to avoid suffering. I know I'd buy stacks of those. But she quoted from George MacDonald, and that's what got my attention. He's my favorite Victorian author, Scotsman. And she defined suffering this way. She said it's a sliding scale word. It has mild forms, it has extreme forms. She said, suffering is not having something you want to have or having something you don't want to have. It's not being where you want to be or it's being where you don't want to be on varying sliding scales. It could be circling through Old Port in the rain, trying to find a good parking place. It could be as simple as that. I don't really want to be here doing this. I want the weather to be different, all of those mild inconveniences. Or it could be all of a sudden finding out that you have a disease that's incurable, or somebody that you love abandons you, or finding yourself in circumstances that you would give anything if you could get out of there, and God says, for the time, till I say so. This is where I want you to be because I'm doing good things. He doesn't say I'm supposed to like it. And the way that I am able to do it, believe me, I eat this for breakfast. It's what got me through this last winter. It's what got me through 11 years ago, the worst pain of my whole life. Every morning, I just say, okay, you're telling me, Lord, that this path that I'm right on right now, which presently has just got way more suffering than I would like. You're telling me that this is the path to the blessing that you have for me. And you're telling me that this is the path if I want to be with you. This is where you're going. And I say, okay, then that's what I'm going to do because I want to be with you. That is the reward in being a follower of Jesus is that you get to be where he is. So it is not just figurative language because literally in a matter of weeks, the whole plot line was going to go decidedly in a different direction than they were expecting. Follow. We looked at this verb, akolutheo, is the Greek verb, Sander, if you're writing it down out in the lobby. It's akolutheo. MOUSE. Akolutheo. It is a word of companionship. It is a word of learning from someone's example by being close to them under all circumstances. It's a word speaks of actually being conformed to someone, and it's a verb tense which speaks of constant action. So he said, if you want to go where I'm going, isn't it a no-brainer to say that if I want to go where Jesus is going, I have to follow him? Meaning that if he's going this way, I can't go that way. Well, isn't that a no-brainer? But it's bizarre how easy it is for church people to think that because I show up in church for a couple of hours a week, I'm a follower of Jesus. And you might say, well, what do you do the rest of the week? Well, pretty much whatever I want to. And I say, well, what does Jesus do the whole rest of the week? And you think, well, I don't know. That's his business. And I think, well, then don't call yourself a follower. I remember something I read that Oswald Chambers said, and I don't particularly love Oswald Chambers on every subject, but once in a while, when I need a kick in the rear end, spiritually speaking, sorry, I said rear end, didn't I? We can edit that out of the tape. Oswald has got some good things to say, but here's what he said about being a follower. I promise you, you're not going to like me. So that's why I'm telling you Oswald Chambers said this. This is very un-American. He said, we cannot call ourselves followers if we are taking the initiative. Because followers follow. Duh. But isn't it weird how I could say I'm a follower of Jesus and then I've got all my plans. I'm trying to get God to follow me. I'm trying to get him to bless my plans. Oh, God, please, I want to do this. Please, please do this. Not wrong to ask. But really, if I'm the one taking the initiative, I can't really legitimately call myself a follower. Thank you, Oswald, for saying that. I admit that sometimes I don't like it, but it's just the truth. Rarely seen. I don't know very many people that live this way. To be honest with you, I didn't live this way a good portion of my Christian life. I would have told you without hesitation that I'm a follower of Jesus. But that was just that's just words. Am I going where he's going? Am I doing what he's doing? No matter what. So just to be honest, I'm telling you the three reasons why I have not followed at times in my life, okay? Maybe you'll relate to it, maybe not. These are the three reasons that I have not followed in my life. Number one is it involves waiting. I hate waiting. I had a friend one time with a very short fuse, and she was funny because I tried to talk to her about the lessons of waiting and patience and all stuff like that. And I remember she just put her hands on her hips and stamped her foot. And she said, God knows I'm impatient. And if he wants to fix that, he just needs to work faster. And I just thought, let me just step away a little here, just, you know, just out of lightning bolt range. Just, you know, don't want a shrapnel, you know, from your disintegrating body to hit me. Because I thought, do you realize what you're saying? In first place, it's illogical to think that I'm going to get better at being patient if God just does everything as fast as I want him to. That just doesn't make sense. So being a follower involves waiting. I move when he moves. I sit there if he's sitting there. Easy to say. You know how many times I mentally had my bags packed and said, okay, I'm done. I'm ready. Okay, let's go. And the Lord says, you know, I'm not going anywhere. I'm staying here. You want to be with me? We stay here. Okay. It also involves changing our plans or scrapping our plans if we're followers. Another Elizabeth Elliot quote. Thank you, Elizabeth, for living this out. She said, sometimes for God's will to be done, my will needs to be undone. Wish that were not necessary sometimes. I wish that God always wanted to do everything just like I do. Just not the way it goes. I'm not smart enough to see what he sees. And the third reason that I've not followed him at times is that he was going someplace I didn't want to go. Pure and simple. I wanted to do one thing, and he wanted to do something else. And okay, see you later. Hope I see you in heaven. And Jesus is just saying to these guys, that isn't going to work if you want to be with me. If you want to be with me, this is the way I'm going to be living from now on for the duration. And did they understand it? Absolutely not. Did they practice it? Absolutely not. They eventually did. Eventually, every one of them laid their lives down for him. He was so kind. And the other thing I see behind this in my newly discovered notes is that Jesus wanted them to be with him. It's not like he's just being a meanie and a killjoy. He's just saying, I want you with me. You're going there. I'm going there. So you want to be with me? We just need to be going the same place because I want you with me. Which I find really cool. That's like when he said, okay, you can leave anytime you want, Bob, and I'll still love you, but this is where I want you to be. This is what This is what I'm doing right now. Verse 24. So whoever wants to save his life, and I think I've got time to wrap up these next few verses. Whoever, no exceptions. There's not one person that this doesn't apply to. Whoever wants to save his life, the word save has to do with protecting, delivering from danger, preserving, holding something intact. And the word for life is not the normal Greek word for life, is it, Fred? It's normally the word for soul or for your core self. So what he's saying is whoever wants to preserve and protect their core self, I would say that probably is all of us. And the word wants is it's a strong word in Greek. It's the word thelo, T-H-E-L-O. It's in a different verb tense than when he says it earlier about whoever wants to be with me or companion with me. This is this is in the present subjunctive if you're interested. But here's what it means. It speaks of a continuous posture towards something. Whoever is always intending, always in a posture of desiring to protect themselves. That's what the grammar is trying to say in the Greek text. Whoever's always in that posture, it's not going to work. You're just going to lose it. That's the thing I said. Like I said, I think that is probably the most disbelieved statement that Jesus made. Our instinct, knee-jerk reaction, when we feel like we're losing the things that we want, is to grab hold. And Jesus said, you know, you're not going to be able to protect yourself if you're living that way. Especially talking to these guys. Whoever wants to save, to protect, to deliver from danger and discomfort and suffering, whoever wants to do that is just going to lose it. I wrote a note to myself, many notes, but the one that I have in my newly discovered notes is you cannot make your life danger-free. And anybody that tells you otherwise is trying to sell you something. It can't be done. There is no such thing as financial security, not in an unstable world like ours. The thing that we're hoping we're going to get, Jesus said, that way you're not going to get it. And like I said, I don't expect people to believe that because I didn't believe it for the longest time either. Years ago on one of my quote walls, I had this little quote. I wish I could give credit to who said it, because it really helped me, because I was a person totally consumed with fear. And it's this: the only remedy against fear is to abandon yourself to God's will. That's the only safe place that there is. Trying to protect yourself, Jesus just said, you know, it's not going to work. It's interesting, if you follow from this juncture on, in these guys' lives, every mistake that they made that put them out of fellowship with Jesus was a mistake they made in self-preservation, self-protection, every single one. It's like I said, love and self-protection are completely the opposite of each other. So you're just going to lose it if that's your posture towards your life. But whoever, no exceptions, whoever loses his life for me, the other gospels say, and for me and for the gospel's sake, will save it. Well, let's look at this, because there's another verb tense issue here in the verb loses. It's aorist subjunctive, if you're interested. I know some of you checked me out. It means this: at any given point in time, anyone who makes a choice at any given point in time to give up their will for my will. And that just brings it right down to everyday living. At any point in time that you say, not my will, but your will be done, He said, you'll find your life. You'll save your life. And once again, didn't believe it. Took a long time before I actually was willing to test it and see if it was true. Will save it. C.S. Lewis said it in a very brilliant, profoundly simple way. He said, aim at the earth and you lose heaven. Aim at heaven and you get heaven, and then you get the earth thrown in along with it. And if you call now, you get this set of steak knives for only $2.99. Aim at earth, you lose heaven. Aim at heaven, you get earth thrown in. By the way, these are the things Jesus said, at least in recorded scripture, these are the things he said more than anything. And he always used whoever's, meaning there's not an exception to this. Check it out. Try it. The problem is you don't usually discover how true this is until you've made all your worst mistakes or you're old. And then you realize, you know, what do I have to show for living for me? Versus what do I have to show for being others-centered and living for him? Does this mean you're going to get fabulous things? You might. You might get fabulous things and then they'll get stolen or something else. It's not about stuff. I've had stuff. I've had lots of stuff. I've had lots of money. And I've lived in a car. And the one constant in my life was Jesus. And that's why I want to put all my weight on him. Well, if I just find the right person, you know, stop right there because you said the word person. And they're people, and people are going to fail at some point. And then he uses another piece of logic in verse 25. He says, really, really, what would it profit somebody if they gained the whole world? Amplified Bible defines that phrase as all of the things that could possibly be achieved or acquired in this life. So what profit if you got all that and you still forfeited yourself, your core self, the one that God created, the one that he knows how to fulfill? Bad trade, wouldn't it? Wouldn't it be a bad trade? And that's a priority issue. And then he said the thing about ashamed. If you're ashamed of me, you're not going to like what that's going to look like in court. Finally, when you're standing before the judge and charges are read and you're standing before God and Jesus, your defense attorney, we looked at last Wednesday night, that's what he's committed himself to be. But you stand before the judge and Jesus says, well, Your Honor, Dad, I did pay for this one, but he would rather go Dutch. Yeah, I did pay. I offered to be his Lord. He declined. He's on his own. So I'm just going to sit down over here. And that's the completely illogical choice that somebody would make. Interesting that Jesus gives people the right to choose. I am not going to force you to do this, he's saying. Your choice. But he's just saying, you want to be with me? I want you to be with me. You want to be with me? I'm going that way. I'm living my life that way. And man, it's so easy just saying, you know, I have decided to follow Jesus. And, you know, and it's just, oh, it just feels so good about myself. But the whole taking initiative thing, the whole choosing against what I want, if push came to shove and Jesus said, no, I would rather you do this, who am I going to yield to? That's another thing entirely. And I pray for you. And you pray for me because this is my life daily. Sometimes it's easier than others. When I'm sitting here looking at your smiling faces and getting all the strokes from all the cards and letters, it's an easy choice. When I feel, you know, neglected and unappreciated and poor and old and all of those things, man. And you know, because could you run those terms by me again? Could we just, because there's a fine print here somewhere. Does whoever really mean me? Does, you know, does this apply to all situations? Is there plan B? Is there a path around suffering? And I think those are all good questions to ask. So, anybody struggle with this? Yeah, you liars, I know you do. But you're here. Let's pray. So, Lord, I'm embarrassed. If I wasn't honest about this, I would have to look you in the eyes and explain how I could possibly pretend that I'm good at this when you and I know different. But Lord, in my heart, not just now, but in my heart, getting up in the morning, in my heart, balancing my checkbook, I want to live my life for you. It's so easy to say, no matter what the cost, until some of the what's happen. But Lord, you know my heart, I mean it, and you know my heart because you gave me that kind of a heart. So help my brothers and sisters, Lord, here today. I know you're not going to force us to follow you. I know that it is the best way for me to live, and you know me better than anyone. You know how to fulfill my life better than anyone. And it's not easy to even believe these things that you say. But I pray that we would consider them. I pray that we would make appropriate choices on a daily basis. For some of us, it may involve dropping right now, today, plans that we have been insisting on, a direction that we have been aimed towards, and we've got a lot invested in it. It may involve praying the prayer that never fails. Not my will, but your will be done. I don't know why that should ever be scary. Your will is perfect. You yourself are wonderful. And I do want to be where you are. Help me to have a better attitude at Lord. And I know because I know I'm going to whine about this later. So thank you for my brothers and sisters that pray for me, that enable me to walk this path. And I'm praying for all the people in other countries and other states, and even our folks that aren't here today who are going to hear this message in its recorded form. I pray that your spirit would touch their hearts like you're doing right now, that we could all look you in the eyes and want to be, from our heart of hearts, want to be where you are, doing what you're doing. And I know if I flake out, you're still going to love me. But I would be missing out, and I don't want to. So thank you. Bless this day, especially the moms, and especially the underappreciated moms. I pray they would feel like queens today, Lord. And we love you. Amen. Thanks for coming.